Your humour is very much, I mean, to call it a stream of one-liners is unfair. It's like a magician releasing a sort of handful and after handful of these magical little confections that you dream up. And I wondered why it was, or how you discovered as an entertainer that miniaturism of that sort was what suited you.
Well, do you know what? I'd like to say that it was deliberate, but I think what it is, I think it started because I got nervous at the gaps between laughs.
Right.
I think that if I just kept it short, then the next laugh would be arriving sooner. So I think I think that's how it developed that I ended up writing like that. And then I ended up, it's true, I do aim towards making things as short as possible. Because it's nice if you get a big laugh and then you can get another one straight off the back of it.
And they're strung together, as one might say, like pearls on a necklace, except that they're not connected.
No, quite often they're not connected. Well, they seem unconnected. People often say to me, Tim, how do you remember your act? As though, you know, it's like a great feat of memory. But I think, to me, they're connected. Because right. I've had to walk around in a field talking to myself to link them somehow. But I never quite work out why people don't say that to someone who's just done Hamlet. You know, no one ever says to someone after Hamlet, how did you remember all that?
Yes.
I would have thought that's a lot harder. But
yeah,
so they seem unconnected. Sometimes they're in clusters of three or four on a subject. Yeah. Yeah, but it does seem a bit stream of consciousness when you watch it, it's true.
And if you... So, I don't know if you can give me an example of a joke that might have occurred to you and that you first expressed it to yourself and you thought, that's good, but I can reduce it, I can concentrate it down.
Yeah, well, I think most... I think a lot of jokes, I suppose you want an example, a specific example. Well, sometimes it's just a case of taking out a phrase. I mean, I could well have said... Something. I've got a joke where I say Velcro, what a rip-off. I mean, let's not analyse that. But, I mean, I could have started that by when I first thought of it, saying, God, the person who, you know, what about the invention of Velcro, ladies and gentlemen? God, what a rip-off that was. Just in that situation, it's just easier just to just go, yes. Velcro, what a rip-off.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does, and it makes it funnier.
Yeah, I think it does, but I don't know quite why that is. That's something to do with comedy in general, isn't it? I don't know why that is.
The best-known American exponent of a string of one-liners is Stephen Wright,
yeah, yeah.
The American. But he also adds to it a rather almost a macabre sort of affect of a sort
yeah,
of dead face.
No, that's right.
Which is not your thing at all. You're much more human and smiley than he is.
Yeah, yeah. That's just a desperation to be like on my part, probably. but his, yeah, he his one of his jokes was, yeah, you can't have everything. Where would you put it? But which again is very nice and short, isn't it? I think it's a bit like with say Ribena. If you have Ribena with water in it, it has less power than if you just drank it neat. You know.
Yes. Very good.
although not necessarily better when it's as strong as that. But.
We get the tooth kind version from you, I'm sure. But it's the concentration of the comic idea. And I suppose it also means that it's using the language in a more specific way than, say, I won't say the lazy, but the standard comedian who comes on with his microphone and leans against it and starts having a chat with the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll have moments where the wording has to be absolutely precise for their laugh, of course, all of them. But in your case, everything is about sculpting each joke.
Yeah, I mean, I've made
a bit
of a rod for my own back with that. I mean, it is true that if you watch someone like Eddie Izzard, some of his stuff from the past, actually, he is going laugh, laugh, laugh in much the same way that if the one-liner person is getting laugh, laugh, laugh. So, you know, I do sometimes kick myself that I didn't, try and create that sort of act for myself where I could have talked about, you know,
yeah,
a combine harvester for 10 minutes.
And of course it allows you though to be a rare thing in the modern world, which is somehow, because these are little gems, little jewels, they seem to have no political, social, cultural, age, gender or class meaning,
well,
so that anybody can enjoy them without feeling, he's that lefty Tim, or he's that righty Tim, or he's that, you know, there's no, it's about the joke itself. It's just about the joy
of
words.
I think I know what you mean, yeah. I mean, I've heard people say that it's a bit... I mean, I remember a review once of my act where someone said it was a bit like being tickled. You know, initially it was annoying. And then it became hilarious. So, which I quite like, you know. And I think there's an accumulative nature to it as well, that if you do a lot of I mean, sometimes in socially, chucking in puns and things can sometimes be... I mean, I'm not the sort of person who necessarily is doing that all the time. My friends will probably disagree. But whereas if you go for an absolute barrage of them, you can sort of wear people down a bit sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what show business is all about, isn't it, Stephen? Wearing people down.
And I collect sort of jokes or stories where the punchline is one word.
Yeah.
You know, which are very pleasing. It's not really a joke, but you know the one of Don Wolfit when he was touring around playing King Lear and Hamlet and doing all the great Shakespearean parts, and he stood holding up or supporting himself in the sentence parting of the curtain, exhausted after having given his Hamlet. He said, "Thank you, your kindness is so appreciated by me and my company. And you may be pleased to know that tomorrow we shall be essaying the highest possible summits of Shakespearean art. I shall be playing the bewildered, tragic figure of King Lear. My wife will be playing my daughter Cordelia." And someone in the voice shouted out, "But she's 72 years old." And there was this, "Nevertheless." It's just that wonderful word, nevertheless. I think
they're
very pleasing.
Yeah.
How a single word can be just do it all.
Yeah. I have a joke where, I quite like it where the punchline is quite short, like you're saying. I have a joke, now sounds rather dated, but where I say, "Did you know that all male tennis players are witches? For example, Goran, even he's a witch." Now, that's kind of one word that yeah, anyway.
They're not pleasing. And you work backwards. I suppose that's the other thing. Like any joke is you look at a joke and you think, so how did someone start from that position and get back to the joke, the setting up of the joke?
Yeah, exactly. You hear someone say "even Ivanisevic" and you think that sounds a bit like... I sometimes say that it's a bit like the kid in Sixth Sense, when he says, "I see dead people." I say, "I hear punchlines." I go around with it, you know. Someone said to me the other day, and it's a phrase I've heard so many times all my life, you know, that said, "serves him right." And you think to yourself, "serves him right." And I thought of a joke about this one-armed butler. Genuine, anyway, you got that eventually.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's
left arm is missing. That's it. It's one arm butler. His left arm is missing. Serves him right. One arm butlers, they can take it, but they can't dish it out.
You see, it's wonderful because it means that every word, every phrase we use, which goes into such stock, stale condition, can be revivified.
Exactly, yeah.
By a comedian for the simple... for a simple reason that he wants to get a laugh, but it also reminds us that we shouldn't take language for granted in a way. You must be much more alert to language than others.
Yeah, I suppose I am. I'm quite a sort of laid back sort of chap, so I don't wander around, you know, literally unable to concentrate on anything except the words that are buzzing around me. But when I'm getting ready for a tour or something like that, I occasionally will go to a... if I'm going to book a room in a library or something, I take the dictionary with me and a guitar, and I think, well, I've got all the notes there, I've got all the words, so something's got to happen.
Yes. I was thinking...
Sometimes it doesn't. But...
the other day when I was on the phone to someone and he reminded me of an appointment we had, and I said, "I am so looking forward to it." And he said, "Great, see you. And as I put the phone down, I said, "with dread." And it's funny that you can look forward to something and that means it's very, very positive.
Yes, yeah.
But you just... can also say, "I'm looking forward to this with horror."
Yeah, because you're literally looking forward to it.
But
yeah,
if you leave it alone, it's apparently positive.
Yeah.
So I felt that I hadn't lied to him. Mm. That's all.
No, that's good. That's clever. Which reminds me of a joke, having you just said that, is that this bloke handed me a box stuffed with Jamaican hair extensions. Dreadful.
These are so small. They really are lapidary. They're little stones that you polish. And can you copyright them? I mean, do you?
Well, no. That's one of the problems, I think, with it, is that particularly in the age of Twitter and the internet and goodness knows what. So these things do float around. I always think if I can just get as far as the tour before it's all gone out there. So I'm not on stage on the touring, and they've all thinking, well, we've heard all this before from you, Tim. So normally the first time I go out touring, it's all fresh to them.
Yeah.
And then it starts seeping out there a little bit, but not a huge amount. I mean, I did have a situation once quite early on, probably about 15 years ago, where some stuff, an email went round the internet saying they were all Tommy Cooper jokes. And that was kind of, at the time, that was quite hard to take because I was on the circuit, so I kind of would be...
And I'm sure the truth. Tommy Cooper scholars would have put them right. I mean, he was master of a short one. I don't know what your favourite is. My favourite is How the Builders. It's a kind of a skip outside your house. I said you can do what you like.
That's mine. There we are. That's a perfect example.
There
we are.
Wonderful.
There and the one about career off the road, and it's about. In fact, I can't remember it now. But the one that was most nicked of mine that was apparently one in five people in the world are Chinese, and there's five people in my family, so it must be one of them. It's either my mum or my dad or my older brother Colin or my younger brother Ho Chao Chao. And that actually got used in a Tommy Cooper stage play. So you know, you can't really control the.
That's a fascinating idea that you're appropriating jokes for dead comedians.
I know. Yes, he's snicking them from beyond the grave. But I think this all goes down to, you know, talking about the whole brevity thing. I think that's one of the advantages of comics who chat like, you know, Alan Davies and as we were saying, Eddie Izzard and stuff, is that it's many people. You go and see Eddie Izzard and you come back and you try and explain it, and you can't, you know. Yeah. Or you go, he does this bit where, and it's all he does this bit where, you know. Whereas with one liners, they really are very repeatable, you know, and they sort of make sense in print.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people who do one liners, it's much easier for them to go walkies, I think.
And have you found that it's a thing? It's a transferable skill. I mean, have you know, Moonpig.com or Hallmark cards or any of the other larger greeting cards companies asked if you would consider?
I've had things appear on greeting cards without them asking me, but you know, but. Yeah, I've occasionally thought about that, but I can't really draw all that well. So,
I suppose I can't help but mention that you are Mycroft to Jeremy's Sherlock, the smarter brother,
Moriarty,
possibly. And when you and Jeremy were growing up, was it just clear that you had a different cast of mind? Brothers are always interesting. He's a very well known broadcaster, and you're a very well known comedian. And could you have ever swapped, or are you so different?
Well, he has actually written a couple of jokes on my act, and you'd probably like to hear one of them.
Yes, I would.
I went to this is quite a silly joke, considering it's Jeremy who made it up. I went to the chemist, I walked up to the counter, and I said, and she gave me some lotion. I said, that's amazing. How do you understand what I just said? She said, that works live, believe it or not. So one of the doctors, he said he got a heart complaint. I said, murmur. He's got a heart complaint.
You see, you've got it. Whatever it is, you've got it. I mean, there are famous newspaper puns, like, you know, whatever it was when, some complicated one when Caledonian thistles were beaten terribly by something or other, and it was a super Cali. I wouldn't bother going there. But I suppose the obvious thing about newspaper headlines is that they have their own language that we don't use in English, and it's for brevity. It's simply for bandwidth in the sense of paper bandwidth rather than bandwidth as we now use.
So I suppose they want it shorter so they can get the letters bigger.
Yeah, MPs in bid to axe is a perfectly normal phrase you would see on a newspaper, MPs in bid to axe. Nobody ever speaks like that.
No.
Are you in a bid to go out of the door?
Are
you in a bid to do this? But anything else is longer. They just crunch it up into the shortest number of letters possible.
No, it's true. If they could have a headline that had just one two-letter word, that's their ideal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember talking to someone who worked for The Sun, and I said that I would like to do that. And so I did actually ring someone up. I thought I might have spoken to the editor. It might be someone pretending to be the editor, of course. He said he would ring me, or someone said that. I think they were humouring me.
Yeah,
they'd let this nutter through on the line, and they were trying to get rid of me, I think. But I'd like to do it.
I was, when the great Mark Boxer was alive, he was editor of Tatler for a time. He was an illustrator and an extraordinary man. And he took me to lunch. I just left university.
Oh, sorry, it's your story we're after.
Yes.
Sorry,
at this moment, I'm just sharing it with you. He took me to lunch at Langan's, which I'd never been to at the time. It was highly fashionable, and Michael Caine was there, and all these faces. I was completely bedazzled by this. I just left university. And Boxer said, I need someone to smell every edition of the Tatler as it comes out. And I said, what? He said, you have to look at the articles, see how they link together and smell. Just get a feeling. Put it together. Give it an identity. I said, do you mean sort of do the puns? He said, yes.
Right.
That's what I mean. Because under Tina Brown, when she'd been at the Tatler before, she'd just developed this whole new way, which they all do now. So there's a spine line pun.
Right.
There's a date pun, so it'd be June, oh, what you're doing, or whatever
it is.
If it was the June edition.
I'll name that June in one or something.
Exactly, precisely. You'd be brilliant at this.